So I know Dave particularly doesn't like playing and then preaching, because it makes it feel like it's kind of like a one-man band up here. And I kind of didn't really know what he meant until about 4 seconds ago. So, and congratulations, everybody. More Joel. don't have to sound too pleased. Great. So, for those of you who don't know, we're just about to start a series. This is the first in the series. The series is called The Gospel Truth. You can see a list of all of the talks that we're doing at the back. There's a card. You can take it home, put it on your fridge, give it to your friends, whatever you want to do. And what we're going to try and do is to focus on some of the fundamentals of what it means to be a Christian. What is this thing that we call the gospel? Why on earth do we think it's a good thing? The word gospel literally means good news. Why is it good news? And what does it mean for you? There's kind of a bit of a... So I don't know whether it was strategic or whether it's just the grace of God. But this season, this series comes... What I think is going to be at the start of a season of growth for us as a church. Sean is off. He's praying, he's trying to work out how we can make the church, the room for the church bigger. How do we, not the physical room, but how do we make room for a bigger church? How do we build a church that could have more people in it? We want to really bless Farnham and Aldershot and Borden, and we've got three sites now, and how do we make those work and make sure that we can grow in a way that's not painful for people as we get bigger? One of the disadvantages is that basically the bigger a church grows, the more responsibility people have to have, but in exchange for more responsibility, they get less control. So Sean, obviously, who's been part of the eldership team when the church was small, he had quite a lot of control, because he could, I don't mean that in a nasty way, but he could literally talk to anybody who he thought was, you know, maybe they were doing a good thing or a bad thing or whatever, and he could just chat to them. We're now big enough that that's not really possible. If he spent an afternoon with everybody that was in the church, it would take him like a year. I should know, because he keeps telling me that he wants to meet up with me and check that I'm not preaching heresy or whatever. He wants to tell you I'm not preaching heresy or whatever, and that takes like 3 or 4 months. You know, it's like, okay, Sean, when can we meet up? It's I'm free in December. Okay, cool, great. I hadn't really thought about December yet, but I'm sure we can sort something out. So anyway, so where are we going? I'm just rambling. Where does that take us as a church? As we get bigger, I think particularly this site, we've got a bit of a journey to go on, because we're kind of a church of like 30, 40, 50 on a busy Sunday. But the next step up is a big one, because it goes from us being like a flat kind of real family feel to a feeling where there might be several, we're all one family, but there's kind of several groups. Maybe we're all kind of cousins. And as part of that, what we're going to need is more gifts. We're going to need more pastoral stuff, we're going to need more evangelism, we're going to need more worship. Notice I'm not saying more preachers, more evangelists. We're going to need more evangelism. Every single person is going to need to put something into that, because it's going to get to the stage where Dave can't get round everybody on a Sunday morning and check that they're doing okay. So we need to be able to gospel and preach the gospel to each other and understand what that is for each of us. And we need to be able to pastor each other. We need to be the shoulders that we can each cry on. Because although we're getting bigger and that creates some stretching, we're actually probably not yet big enough to have like a second full-time person, right? We don't get another Dave probably until we get a bit bigger than that. So it is a painful stage because there's like a curve, isn't there? You get one sort of full-time person on, and that's hard work. And it gets harder and harder and harder as the number of people increases. And then eventually you get to a certain number of people where finances really stop being an issue. If you study church growth, sorry, this, we're going off on one again, I'm rambling. There's about 500 people, if you care. Right, cool. So this is really important. What I want you to do this morning is I want you to know the gospel more when we finish this morning. I want you to know more about forgiveness. And because this is the first one, I want to kind of go over the gospel itself in rough detail. So I want you to know it better this morning. If you're not a Christian, that's fine. I'm not staring at you, whatever. But I would hate for you not to be a Christian because you didn't understand what it was we were talking about. Like, if you're going to be a Christian, that's wonderful. If you're not going to be a Christian, that's okay. I'm not here to force this down your throat. But I'd hate for you not to know what it is we're talking about. So that's the first thing. And then as Christians, we need to know the gospel better. But we also need to be better at taking it and telling it to our friends that they would understand. Because wouldn't it be a shame if there are some people who are in boredom, who are living lives that are less than what God planned for them, simply because they didn't understand what it was that we had? They can make an informed choice. I want people to make an informed choice, but I want them to make an informed choice. Does that make sense? Like, that's where we're going with this. So I'm going to do something. I'm hoping, although I'm burning through time at a rate of knots and I haven't even made my first point yet. What I would really like, right, is as we go through this, what I'd really like you to do is to try and start thinking about what the kind of questions that your friends and other colleagues will have about this stuff, and maybe you can try and answer them. I'm actually going to do something a little bit dangerous. It's probably the most dangerous thing you can do as a preacher. I'm going to say, when we get to the end, I'm going to try and make sure that we've got enough time. This is why I'm speaking a bit fast. Try and make sure we've got enough time we can do some Q&A. So if you can come up with the most difficult questions, it doesn't matter whether you just think about the difficult questions, and I'm going to try and answer them, and we'll see where that goes. It could be a complete disaster. Lord Jesus, please let it not be a complete disaster. Right, I'm on your grace. You know this stuff, so it's good. Right. is there some water around? Sorry, gosh, apologies. So I can just feel my throat drying up. As it goes, the sermon. Right. Cool. What makes you happy? What are you doing? What are you trying to do to make yourself happy? See, we've all got things that we've got things, wants, little desires, things we think will make us happy. Thank you very much. Oh, that's so good. Jesus, you're the water of life. Yeah. You understand it when you're really thirsty and you drink water. And you're like, cool, that's what Jesus meant. So what do we do to make ourselves happy? What are the things, your hopes, your dreams? You know, if you were to have one wish, what would it be? I don't know, what would it be? Maybe a new car. Maybe what you're seeking is excitement or fulfillment. Maybe it's something simple. Maybe you just, maybe not so simple. Maybe it's a relationship. Maybe if I was to find out what your deepest desire was, your thing you think would make you happy, it would be just a relationship or some fix in some relationship you already have. Maybe it's a relationship with your parents or your children or your cousins or whatever it is. We've all got things that we want to make us happy. Maybe I'm a millennial, unfortunately. I'm sorry. There's part of me that like wants like stuff like world peace. I really want to live in a world where we can all actually get on, and that we see horrible things going on in the world, and I don't know how to make it stop, but I want it to stop. And there's part of me that thinks if I could just come up with the right political solution to this thing, we could make it work and we could be happy. But the problem is that often when we actually get these things that we think are going to make us happy, they don't. We find that relationship, we find that person, it's all romantic, it's going really well, and then we discover eventually that they're not perfect and it doesn't completely fulfill us. We see some kind of justice issue and we lash out at it, we say, that's really bad, and yet somehow it just makes us more angry. We can't quite find the right fix for the whole thing. The more we uncover the injustice, the more injustice there is underneath it. Maybe we are just allowing our minds for us to dwell on some imaginary future where everything is perfect. And we just think, you know, I just want to think about all these things that would make me happy, and that will make me feel a bit better just for now. And yet we find that the longing only gets worse. See, it's my belief that there are parts of our soul that want something more, that want us to be happy, and they've been put there for a reason. It's a hole that's calling out for the things of heaven, calling out for goodness, for that happiness, for that something that is beyond words. So I want to make the case this morning that forgiveness, or specifically unforgiveness, is one of the things that keeps us away from those things. And in fact, it's actually worse than the fact that we're just simply kept away from those things, kept away from the sort of happiness we desire. It's also that we often find that as we try and seek out these things to try and make us happy, we not only end up not happy, but we end up not even with the thing itself. We destroy good relationships because we're trying to use somebody else to soothe our hurts. And we've all been in relationships where somebody else is trying to use us to soothe their hurts. And we know how much damage that does. And yet it doesn't stop us doing it. Maybe we seek to do work. You think, if I just get a promotion, if I work a bit harder, if I make a bit more money, I will be happy. And yet we discover that we turn work into this slave driver that we're constantly seeking to appease. And actually it turns out we're really exhausted at those times when we actually need to work hard. And we discover that not only are we not happy at the end of it, but we don't even end up with the things that we wanted out of work because we're exhausted and we end up hating work as a kind of a master. I don't know if you've been there. Maybe you look at like the revolutions that have happened in the world and the way that they sought justice. They came from a good place. Maybe it was the poor looking at the rich and saying, this is not fair. How do we make it better? And yet when the revolution is over, when the dust clears, it turns out that there's just a different set of rich people. You've just created a new set of powerful people. And somehow, you didn't end up happy, but neither did the revolution deliver what it was supposed to deliver. Why is it we can't, as people, actually get these things, make these things, find these things that make us really happy? Well, the thing, as far as I can see, is that these things aren't big enough to fill the hole that we have. We were made for something more. We want things of heaven, and we can't find those things in this world. You're trying to use a person to fill a hole that is made there for God. It was made for something bigger. You were made for something so much bigger than just another relationship. You were made for something so much bigger. See, so how do we get these things from heaven? So I want you to imagine, just for a second, maybe you've been to a posh party. You've been to a great, I don't know, something, you know, I'm not talking about like something where you could turn up in your jeans and t-shirt, right? Pardon? Yeah, no, I'm not talking about going to the Old Thorns. I'm talking about a party where you needed to dress up. Maybe meeting somebody important. I remember when I first met Hattie's grandfather for the first time. He's kind of proper old school, and I just wouldn't have been right for me to turn up there the first time wearing what I am now. Sorry, no offence to you guys, me turning up wearing this, right? But it wouldn't have been right. I was important for me to wear a shirt because that was a sign of respect, a way to honour what he was. And you know, when we're trying to take things from heaven, when we're trying to get involved in heaven, we need to be properly dressed as well. I'm just gonna read a section from the Bible now. This is Luke 14. It's like, how well does Joel know his Bible? Can he find it fast enough? Right, Luke. This is Luke 14, 15 to 25. When one of those who reclined at the table with him heard these things, he said... That's a slightly confusing place to start, but this is Jesus speaking. He said to him, "Blessed is everyone who will eat bread in the kingdom of heaven." But he said to him, "A man once gave Sorry. Somebody else is talking to Jesus. Blessed is everyone who will eat bread in the kingdom of heaven. But he said to him, this is Jesus, a man once gave a great banquet and invited many. And at the time for the banquet, he sent his servant to say to those who had been invited, come, for everything is now ready. But they all alike began to make excuses. The first said to him, I've bought a field. I must go out and see it. Please have me excused. And another said, I have bought 5 yoke of oxen, and I go to examine them. Please have me excused. And another said, I have married a wife, and therefore I cannot come. So the servant came and reported these things to his master. Then the master of the house became angry and said to his servant, go out quickly into the streets and the lanes of the city and bring in the poor and the crippled and the blind and the lame. And the servant said, sir, what you commanded me has been done, and there is still room. And the master said to the servant, go out into the highways and the hedges and compel people to come in, that my house may be filled. For I tell you, none of those men who were invited shall taste my banquet. So the kingdom of heaven is like a banquet. And in another version of that story that we could have read, it's pretty much the same story in Matthew, it talks about how they find a man at the feast who's not dressed properly because it's a feast and he's just wearing his own clothes and he's thrown out. If we're going to involve ourselves with heaven, we need to be properly dressed. We need to be respectful of that place. And God, it turns out, has given us a kind of a dress to wear. He's given us a kind of list of rules that we call the law. And there's a version of it in the Old Testament, but there's also a version of it in our souls that tells us what the difference is between right and wrong. And God's given us some things to do and to wear, like a shirt. You know, a list of all these rules. A friend of mine who's a lot posher than I am, who comes from the right sort of family, was telling me about some of the rules that you have if you're going to really, really posh things. You know, you're only allowed shiny shoes if you're going to a white tie. Black tie, they're supposed to be matte. Who knew that? Yeah? Yeah, you've got to have 2 different pairs of really posh shoes. Right? Anyway, so God's given us like a shirt to wear and a list of things. He says, if you're going to be welcome in my house for this great massive party, we've all got to dress up properly for each other. But the problem is, as we try and put that thing on, we find first of all, there are some bits that don't seem right. You know, we think, you know, I've never thought cufflinks were that cool, so I'll just roll up my sleeves. Yeah? We've all done this. We say, you know, and it's like with the law, we say, you know, being honest is cool, is cool, it's good. I can see that being honest is good, but it will get me into trouble at work. You know, being honest with a client or a customer. We want to tell somebody a white lie about what it is we're doing, how the project is progressing. Just tell them it'll be there in a week. But we know it won't be there until 2 or 3 weeks' time. Yeah, but we can cross that bridge in a week's time. If we have to tell them that it's a month now, they're not going to like that. So we'll just push it out a week every couple of weeks. And they'll be a bit frustrated, but it won't be as bad as if we just told them now. And then we put on this shirt. And we discover, to our horror, that some of the things that we wanted to, that we are supposed to be wearing, we don't even have. So I don't have a tie. I might be supposed to wear it, but I don't have one. I don't know where to get it from. You know, it's like sometimes we run out of kindness. I don't know if we've all done this, right? We get to the end of a long day, you're tired, you're annoyed, and we just flip out at somebody. And it's not because, because we were deliberately doing something, we weren't necessarily making a choice, we just ran out of ourselves. I know some of you have run out, I'm sure, in the last week. There are times when I've run out of myself. I just ran out of capacity to do good things. And then, you know, as we keep trying to put this suit on, yeah, you see what's going to happen here, right? We discover, to our horror, that there are actually some things in the way. Right, I'm wearing a belt and I'm trying to get this thing on, and it it doesn't fit because there's some stuff in my life that is not going to come with me. Maybe you've got, I don't know what it is, right? There are some things you need to let go of, some relationships that are not healthy for you. Maybe it's a relationship with food or with drugs or with sex or whatever it is, but that doesn't fit. And we find ourselves looking stupid and nowhere near meeting the high standard of being allowed into the party. Maybe that's you this morning. Maybe you can see that there are some good things in heaven for you, but you are stood here looking like a wally like me. Yeah? So there are so many reasons why we fall short. And the trouble is, actually, when we examine some of these things, what we discover is that actually some of these things are our fault. Right? I could have, taken my mic pack off so this would have come up a bit higher. But some of these things aren't our fault. Maybe you're standing outside of heaven and you're saying, this standard you're asking of me, God, is not fair. It's not fair because I can't meet it because I've done some bad things, but actually some bad things have been done to me. Maybe the thing that you're wearing that you need to let go of is some unforgiveness about some kind of abuse you've suffered. Maybe that's the thing that's preventing you from being good enough. It doesn't seem fair, does it? Maybe it's how your brain's wired. Maybe you find you're anxious and depressed, and that's why you run out of yourself, why you don't have a tie. It's because you've... And so some of these things are your fault. Some of them aren't. Maybe it's because you've had a tragedy and you came to the point where you needed some friends by your side and you discovered there was nobody there. You got to the last garrison from the invading army, worried you were going to run out of yourself and discovered that none of your friends that you'd put time and effort into were prepared to stand by you in that dark place. I'm going to take this off now because I'm looking stupid. It doesn't seem fair. And the fact is, it's not fair. There are some things that people have put on you that are going to keep you out of heaven. Some things people have put on you that are going to keep you out of heaven. There are some things that have been done to you that long term are going to keep you out of heaven. And that's sad. It's heartbreaking to know that sometimes the abuse or the hard words that people have been given is what means that they themselves aren't fit to do nice things to other people. Yeah? We've all been there. We imagine maybe a foster child who's been abused growing up. The thing that they most need to understand is love. And the thing they need is love and care, but they are in not the right place at all to receive that. It's going to be hard for the foster parents to take that job on. Well, the thing I can tell you that is good is God is just. Right? If there is stuff that's been done to you by other people, God is going to hold those people accountable. We often think of the justice and anger of God as kind of an inconvenient truth, but it is really good to you if you've suffered under other people. You can move forward knowing that God is going to hold those people accountable. That God is not going to tell you that abuse you suffered doesn't matter. It does matter. It matters an awful lot. Because the things that we do are not just an attack on our friends, but they're an attack on God. In Genesis it says that that all people were made in the image of God. If that means if I slap my friend, I might have slapped him, he's felt a slap and that's bad, but what God has felt is a complete and total dishonouring of the image that he's put of himself on earth. I've just slapped the image of God. I've just said I don't care about it. Or maybe we tell a white lie, and maybe our friend doesn't even notice that we've just wangled the truth a little bit. The thing that we've done to them is very small, but the thing that we've done to God is much greater, because we have basically told God that truth is less important than our own happiness on this issue. And God is truth. So we're saying, God, I don't care about what you're doing with truth. I've got me. And that's the sad fact, is that as much as we want God to be just when it comes to other people, the sad fact is that means he's got to be just with us. Our sin matters desperately. The bad things that we do matter desperately. The way we've dishonored him and walk away matter desperately, because we've done awful, awful things. And we can't dress ourselves properly to go to the party that he's got for us. The honest thing is, we need to be forgiven. We need to get to the point where it's okay for us to try and go to the party dressed like this, in our shorts and our t-shirt, because that's all we have. We need God to say, I love you. I don't care if you're in your shirt and your t-shirt, come anyway. That means we need somebody to stand in our stead. The problem we have is we're all in debt to God. Right, so what's the solution? One, we could totally ignore the system. Yeah, you could just say, look, I don't care about what anybody's doing. I'm just going to live my life and go on, and I'm not going to hold it against you. I don't judge me. I don't judge. I'm not a judge. I'm not that person. The problem is, when somebody does something really awful to us, we all know in our hearts that we want that person to be held accountable. And that's the right thing, that we want them to be held accountable. Okay, so what other options? Well, we could all just kind of forgive each other. We could sort of move the bar, if you will. We say, look, I haven't done that many things that are wrong. I've done a few things, but we'll move the bar a little bit, and we'll just say everything sort of above this is fine. And wherever you set the bar, maybe you set it at Hitler, and we'll all be fine, or whatever it is, you move that bar. And you say, well, look, in our society, we're all pretty good people. The problem there is that there's several problems there. The first is that we always want to set the barrier, that bar, just a bit lower than where we're at or where our friends are at. Right? Nobody wants to set the bar so low that rapists and murderers are just allowed to walk into heaven. That's not right. That's the first thing. The second problem is we often, particularly in our society, don't see all of the things that we're really guilty of. You know, when we go around and do our shop on a Saturday morning or whatever, we don't necessarily see the slavery or the abuse that has taken place on our behalf simply to get those products to the shelves. You know, it might be that at some point, I believe, we'll see everything as it really is on Judgment Day. And it might be that on that point, we look at the people who we have basically have been kept in slavery on our behalf effectively, and we look at those people and we say, how on earth could we have done that? You know, if you start looking around on YouTube or other things, you'll start to see some of the abuse that takes place just in the chocolate industry. You want to, I mean, that's something that you might only, and we've all eaten not fair trade chocolate. And actually, fair trade isn't always that much better. There are some significant problems with it. So if you've ever eaten a chocolate bar, you've taken part in some slavery. You've taken part in doing something awful to somebody. Somebody who was struggling, who wasn't being paid enough, who's living hand to mouth, who's not sleeping enough because they've got quota to fill. The truth is, we're all really, really guilty of stuff. But it just happens to be that in our society, we get to put all that stuff out of mind, because most of the really awful things that we commit don't happen in this country. Or maybe you've talked to somebody about our immigration system, particularly if they're from like a Commonwealth country or not a European country. It's really hard. We are a faceless monolith that does some awful things to people who want to come here from the Commonwealth. People who want to come here to be nurses and doctors, and they have to pay thousands and thousands of pounds to be allowed to bring their families over. We're the faceless. We have a government that works on our behalf to do these things. And I'm not trying to get political, because I know both sides of the government have been part of this. I'm not taking a pro-conservative, pro-Labour, whatever. We have been guilty of these things, and I don't know a way to fix them. So I'm not trying to hold these people accountable, but they do some awful things on my behalf. And the truth is, I haven't helped to make things any better. Well, the next thing we could try is we could turn to God and we'll say, look, I'll work off my debt. I've got this debt to you, I'll work it off. And as Christians, we're really guilty of this. If you're a Christian here this morning, we do this all the time. We say, if I turn up early for church, that's a point in the God box. You know, we think about ourselves in a self-righteous and religious way. We think we're scoring points with God. And the truth is, unfortunately, that first of all, that is the expectation. You know, it's like we've got been given everything by God. He's just asked us to do a good job, and we're like, I'll do you a good deed if it's. You know, it's like imagine Isaac, right? He does some painting sometimes, and he'll do some stuff on some paper. And let's say one day he smashes my TV. He's not smashed my TV, but let's say he did, right? That'd be a bad thing. And then he was like, look, here's the thing, I've got this paper in this that I've painted with my handprints. I'll give you that in exchange for TV. I'd be very impressed if it happened soon, because it'd be a pretty interesting argument for him to have made. But I'm sure there'll come a time when he does bad things to us. But he hasn't got any way of really paying that off. We can punish him to encourage him not to do it again, but he can't in any way. He's never going to be able to pay off the debt that he owes me. In the same way, I can't pay off the debt that I owe my parents. And it's just like that with God. We don't have anything else to pay it off. So we need somebody in credit. If you're in debt, you can't pay off the debt of somebody else. So we need to find somebody in credit. And thankfully, there was somebody who was in credit with God. Jesus, in God himself, did something that he didn't have to do, something that he wasn't expected to do. He stepped down from being God and became a human and did all sorts of amazing and wonderful things and ran up a huge credit. And then right at the end of his life, he was treated like a criminal, somebody who had a huge debt. He was basically beaten up and given a death that would have been absolutely acceptable if he'd been a criminal, but he wasn't. So what happened to that huge amount of credit? Well, I've got some fantastic news for you this morning. I've got some really, really, really great news. And I'm rushing because I've overused some other time, I'm sorry. But I've got some great news. He made it out to us in a will. You want to read it? It's a will. And so when Jesus died, he died with a huge amount of credit in his account on God, and he said, I give this to anybody who would accept it from me. All that credit is sitting in a will for you. You see these TV shows, right, sometimes, where somebody dies without a will, and then you get people like hunting around trying to find their nearest relative. And sometimes they go a really long way, and sometimes it's somebody, they've never even met the person, but this person comes to them, but somebody from like the TV show comes to them and says, I've discovered you're the nearest relative of John Smith. And he's left a load of money, but it's not in a will, so it's just going to his nearest relative. So here's, you know, £10,000, £70,000, completely unexpected out of the blue. It's like that with us. We ought not to have expected, as we killed Jesus, that he had given us something, but he had. He'd left a will for us, and that will was for every single good thing in the kingdom of heaven. He was giving us some forgiveness for our debts. Cool. So, how do we live off the back of that? We've got permission to go into heaven and actually get those things now. So what are the things that we ought to be giving? The first thing that we ought to be doing, if we really understand what Jesus has done for us, is we ought to be better at forgiving each other and having grace with each other. It's really hard because we're not always perfect. We've got rough edges. I've got rough edges. You've got rough edges. But we need forgiveness and grace and love in spite of all those things. And actually, as we grow as a church, we're going to need more grace and more love for people who absolutely don't deserve it, just like you don't deserve it. You know, I look forward to the day when we have people who are addicted to drugs or also, you know, having really awful mental health problems are finally coming here so that we can pray for them. But they're not going to be clean and nice. They're going to be a mess. They're going to be a mess just like we've all been a mess. You know, there's going to be hopefully times when there are people who are actually physically high in our services. There's going to be people who've involved themselves in magic and all sorts of the things of darkness who come here on a Sunday morning and bring that with them. People who are demonized. There's going to be times when we're not going to really understand what's going on in our Sunday services because things are going to get messy. But the good news is that messy places are where life is. You want to see a nursery? Really messy. Right? If you've ever been involved with a child being born, messy. Right? It is messy. But it's good. Right? If you want, I've been in churches that haven't been growing, that haven't been messy, and the unfortunate truth is they're dying. Right? You want to see something really clean? Graveyard. Yeah? Loads of people there, and you only need to cut the grass once a year. Right? It's not the same with us. The second thing is we need to forgive ourselves. Because the fact is, as we bump and tangle along with people, we're still going to do some parts of our old life, some things that God hasn't quite yet worked on us. And we're going to need to forgive ourselves. Sometimes that's the thing that holds us out of heaven, is our inability to just take things at... To just let stuff go that we've done to ourselves. But there is good news, because, and this is something we're going to be talking about more probably next week, but because we're clean, because we're forgiven, because we can go to this party, God can start to work on us. The Spirit of God can actually come and indwell in us. We can actually talk to God, we can be part of heaven, and we can start to work on ourselves and make ourselves the kind of people that can go out there into the world and give people happiness. The kind of people who actually can get happiness out of life. You know, if we try and get something to make us happy, we end up without the thing and we end up without being happy. But when we seek God first, and God fulfills that inner need, actually then we can have those things. Yeah? You know, I love music, and I find that my music is best when I put God first and I worship Him in all that I'm doing. Because that music isn't trying to fill a hole anymore. I just get to enjoy it for what it is. Because the thing that's filling the hole is God. Sorry, I've gone on far longer than I had planned. I'm sorry about that. You'll have to forgive me. Yeah, this time. Yeah. So I'm just going to pray to finish. Then I want to see if anybody's got any questions. If we run out of time for questions, which I hope we will, but I don't know who's got questions, I'll just go to the back and we can answer some questions. Is that cool? Please try and think of the most difficult questions your friends are asking you. Okay. Lord God, thank you so much that we're forgiven. Thank you that you have paid off this debt if we choose to accept it. I pray, would you help us to be people that show that we're forgiven to the rest of the world? That are able to bring them good things. In the name of Jesus, amen.